This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Like, I hadn't heard of this film before, and I have to thank you, Ben, for alerting me to it. I think you're doing great work in bringing people to this kind of cinema.
I just really enjoyed being in the company of these three unique characters.
It's just amazing. You can tell from like my voice, I get so excited about this. He is a genius, or was.
It's testament to how much of an effect Tokyo Godfathers had on me that I went and I watched Paprika straight away.
The thing that I love about this the most, really, is just how expertly crafted it is. Like, I don't think there's a wasted moment in there. I've seen it countless times now, and it just gets better every single time.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. I'm Kobe. Today, I'm joined by Joe.
Hello.
Ben.
Yo.
Helen.
Hello.
And we're talking about Tokyo Godfathers.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Ben and Joe. If you could please say hello and tell our listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm from the Third Window Films podcast. And basically, we talk about the film distribution label Third Window Films.
It's not who you work for, Ben.
It's not, no.
Oh, I got that wrong.
I guess he's getting free labor from me, really, for marketing. But no, it's kind of interesting, actually, how it all came about. When lockdown first started, I started going back through, East Asian back catalogs, just trying to find some directors that maybe I hadn't seen much from. And I found this guy, Toshiaki Toyoda, who is a bit of a kind of a punk rock auteur out of Japan, and I bought one of his box sets that just happened to be Third Window, and started tweeting about it as I was watching them. And I tagged him in it, and he messaged me a few days later and said, I've had about 200 of these on my shelves, just not shifting, and since you've been tweeting about them, we've now sold out.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And he was like, just wanted to say thank you and glad to see you're so passionate about it. And we just kind of started talking from there. And it got to the point where I said, you know, have you ever thought of a podcast? And he's like, I'd love to do one, but I just got none of the know-how. And I was like, I could probably help you out with that. Yeah.
Twitter for the power of good is an unknown thing. So this is
right?
A wonderful story.
And honestly, he is such a nice bloke. And I don't know if you've heard the show, but he's just like a really nice, giving guy. And he loves his fans. So yeah, the fact that I get to chat to him about his films, you know, he releases about one or two films a month. So we just do one episode a month, you know, we talk about that film and anything else revolving around that. For example, the last one we did was called Micro Budget Hits, because he released a tiny budgeted film called Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. And then we talked about like One Cut of the Dead and a few other things that he's done, you know. So yeah, it's been really fun.
And form of Sudden Double Deep. She says, well,
yes. Yeah.
we've had the other guys in here a couple of times, I think.
Well, Kobe, that's actually where we first met, wasn't it? You came to our kind of birthday party.
Indeed.
About 3 years ago or something like that.
Exactly. That was a good afternoon. And we've got on the other side, we've got Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Hi, everyone. My name is Joe. I'm a former host of the Scheidgeist podcast, which is where I met these lovely people, Kobe and Helen.
I say I'm booing to the former because obviously it'd still be fun if you guys still existed.
Yeah, it's just it's hard to do, as you know, it's hard to fit into a schedule, so it's difficult to keep up. But I'm here mainly to big up the Wire Stripped, which is primarily where my output is, and Kobe can tell you everything there is to know about it. It's been really good for me to delve into the Wire in ways that I haven't before, and maybe to read up on some of it and find some avenues that are less explored or that haven't been spoken about before. So that's, you know. That's great.
That's lovely. I didn't pay you to say that. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Well, we're here talking about Tokyo Godfathers. This is your choice, Ben. Can you tell us, first of all, I can sense why you chose it. I think you're a big fan of East Asian cinema. Tell us why you chose it, and then I'll get the timer ready for a synopsis of 60 seconds or less.
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, I am obsessed with East Asian cinema in general, but I kind of grew up on anime, you know, stuff like Akira and Ghost in the Shell and some of the series like Cowboy Bebop and stuff like that, and the Ghibli stuff as well, of course. But I never really heard of Satoshi Kon, who did Tokyo Godfathers. So I've just come to his work recently and I'm just obsessed, basically. I just think he's a genius, or was a genius. Sadly, he passed away in 2010. But yeah, he started off doing manga in the 80s. And then he was a background artist in the 90s. And then he did his first film in 97, I think it was, which was called Perfect Blue, which is this masterpiece of like surreal, dark cinema. And yeah, he did Millennium Actress, which is like a fake documentary biopic as well. And then Tokyo Godfathers came next. And yeah, just you can't go wrong with his work, really.
And what's the synopsis of Tokyo Godfathers, starting now?
Okay, so on Christmas Eve in Japan, there's three homeless people living on the streets of Tokyo. One is a middle-aged alcoholic named Jin. The other is a transgender woman named Hana. And there's a kind of teenage runaway girl named Miyuki. And they discover a newborn baby in the trash, and a madcap adventure goes forth from that.
Awesome. Joe, Satoshi Kon, have you heard of him before? And what do you think of Tokyo Godfathers?
I hadn't heard of this film before, and I have to thank you, Ben, for alerting me to it. I think you're doing great work in bringing people to this kind of cinema. I hadn't heard of it before, and it was maybe the first anime that I watched that had absolutely no supernatural or sci-fi or fantasy element in it whatsoever. Like it's so grounded. And I suppose it's testament to how much of an effect Tokyo Godfathers had on me that I went and I watched Paprika straight away. So I think...
Hold on, is Paprika, is that available on Netflix?
It's not. So forget I said that. It's not on Netflix. Forget I said that.
No, just because a lot of people talk about Paprika because it's a lot of people compare it to Inception.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, this the central premise of a dream within a dream within a dream came from Paprika, yeah. It's such a crazy film. But I'm so glad that you kind of came from this grounded reality side of him and then went to that super surreal side. That's awesome. There's so much in between that as well, though, so I really recommend you keep going down that rabbit hole.
I mean, there's full of a lot of coincidences and nice tie-up points, which wouldn't normally happen in, I guess, real life, but that's... obviously the story that we're following of these guys. Helen, what do you think of Tokyo Godfathers?
I'd never heard of this before, so this was a big introduction for me. I had heard of Paprika, but not made any connection until just now. And I don't really know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting this, which isn't a bad thing. I should add that sometimes I say things and they come out and I hated it, but I really enjoyed it. And I just really enjoyed being in the company of these three unique characters. And there's kind of like a lot of strange and wonderful things that happen, but then there's also kind of a lot of realism happening as well. And sort of the Japanese and how they treat their homeless kind of really comes through in that. So there's kind of a lot going on, including like a kind of like mad soundtrack as well that I really enjoyed. So thanks for bringing this Christmas film, I should say, probably more of an alternative Christmas film, but it is obviously very festive and set around the Christmas period.
Yeah, I mean, it is super grounded. Obviously, there are coincidences which just kind of make it, I think, because it is a Christmas film, you have to have some of those, I don't want to say contrivances, but those there's points which wouldn't normally happen, like Miyuki meeting her dad right at the end and stuff like that, which are just
pains me for you to spoil it like that. People that might, I know, but
we spoil from this, you know.
Well, like the thing that I love about this the most, really, I mean, apart from the social commentary, like you've all mentioned, is just how expertly crafted it is. Mm. I don't think there's a wasted moment in there, and I've seen it countless times now. I mean, like I said, I've only been watching it about 2 or 3 years, and I must have seen it at least 5 or 6 times, and it just gets better every single time. And I know, I think last year or the year before last, they recorded an English language dub that is available. But I loved that. I just watched it on Netflix for this show, and it's still the Japanese one is the only available option. And I kind of prefer it that way. I don't know how you guys feel about subtitles, but I mean, that's the only way I watch this stuff, because I think it's just how it was intended.
I think for me, animation, and we've talked about this before when we've had Ghibli on, but animation, I'm not so fussed, but I will... When we've had Ghibli on, I've kind of flipped between them both, and sometimes it's startling how ridiculous the differences are. And also sometimes I've had the English on and also English subtitles, and when that's completely different to each other, that's really jarring. But otherwise, yeah, if it's a non-animation film, I'm 100% subtitles if it's a foreign language one.
I think Ghibli are the one sort of studio that you're safe with the English dub, because they have like Billy Bob Thornton and Kate Winslet and stuff.
Well,
like
that's
that,
what makes it really interesting with those guys. Yeah. Or yourself, Joe and Helen?
My preference is always to go with the original version of it. But I would say, like, I have a tendency when watching anime and reading the subtitles to kind of... It's a lot to take in, like, the performances and read it and take in the animation. I find anime makes me quite sleepy. I might be unique in that, but I always, like... Particularly a film that has a lot of kind of dreamy elements or something that's quite slow paced, I kind of get lulled into it, and it's a really nice kind of unique form of cinema for that. I don't think that there's any other type of cinema that has that effect on me, and I'm definitely not saying that that's a bad thing, but it's just something that I need to be aware of as I settle in to watch either Ghibli or even things like Akira and Ghost in the Shell that you mentioned. I went to Ghost in the Shell in the cinema in Bristol, and I was just kind of sleepy in the
oh wow.
You know, it's
a very cozy cinema, though. I think I've actually fallen asleep in the Ritzy before, so
but what I mean, the animation here is super expressive. I'd like to touch on the backgrounds, but the animation of the style of these main three characters is super expressive, and they're not doing obviously the Warner Brothers eyes popping out of the head, but they are like literally big eyes, and suddenly it's like reduced into themselves. But one thing I took away from this one is, I haven't seen Akira or Ghost in the Shell, but one of the things I, you know, reading about those is everyone's astonished at how well they can portray the background, because everything's so dark. And in this one, the background is so dark, but so detailed. And sometimes I was like, are they on top of a photo in those cases? And when you said, Ben, about Satoshi Kon as a background artist, is that where he puts a lot of his detail and a lot of what he has effort into? Yeah.
100%. He was a very kind of succinct author. And I know that sounds a bit wanky probably, but, I know he puts everything into all aspects of his films, and that's why he only ever made 5. And, you know, sadly, that's all we're ever going to get. But yeah, his backgrounds are phenomenal. His character work's just insane. And like you said, I mean, if you watch a bit more of his work, you'll start to see through lines and how they interact with each other, because they're very volatile often. Like, you know, you think you know where you're at with them, and then all of a sudden they'll just completely surprise you. But this is without question his most grounded work. If you wanted to kind of tiptoe into the more surreal stuff, I'd say go to Millennium Actress next, because it starts off as a kind of faux documentary biopic, and it slowly gets more and more surreal as you go in, and before the end, and you're like flying through the air, and you just kind of feel, what just happened? Why am I here? But yeah, it's just amazing. You can tell from like my voice, I get so excited about this. He is a genius, or was.
What do you make about the main kind of storyline? It's always disheartening, heartbreaking to have that abandoned child, but the way those guys bandied around to try and find the parents and find the mother, and then the mother wasn't the mother, it's almost super melodramatical, but also, yeah, kind of looked at it. That's what really drew me in, as well as the backgrounds, as well as the animation, as well as the whole story and plot line.
Well, there's two parts of it that get me. I mean, the first part is you look at these characters and you go, right, there's someone who supposedly from his perspective says that he lost his his wife and child and lost his job and ended up on the streets. There's someone else who was taken in by a den mother sort of thing in a kind of karaoke bar and then, you know, lashed out violently and got extradited and thrown out on the streets. And the little girl that was, you know, abused at home and had to go. And then later on in the story, you hear that they're all basically telling a fable. they've twisted their own realities into thinking this is how this has happened to them. But it's just not the case. I'm not saying that's entirely sensitive to the homeless community. You know, I'm sure there are some horrible stories about why people are on it. My partner actually works as a homelessness prevention officer for the Cambridge City Council. So she deals with all this stuff every single day. And I really wanted her to watch it with me. And she just thought it was brilliant. She loved it. She said, you know, these characters, whilst they're not exactly the sort of people that she meets every day, she goes, they are really funny or really clever or they have amazing stories, you know. And if you just sit there and actually take the time to listen to them, you can really experience these lives. And yeah, I think he really captured that. And like you said, he makes it fun and he makes it kind of memorable. Yeah. So yeah, I just think it's brilliant.
I really liked how he would constantly wrong foot the viewer and set them up thinking, oh yeah, I think I know where this is going. Like they introduce a mafia Godfather storyline. You're like, oh, this is the rest of it. No, not that. Or there's the old man and he's obviously sadly expiring. He's passing away. And the visual language of the windmills shutting down slowly and he closes his eyes. And as a viewer, you're like, I know exactly what's going on here. And then they start back up and he wakes up and he's toying with the audience constantly. And so there's really good moments of humor that are brought to it and like extremely skilled in his editing. I think the match cuts between scenes and some of the scene transitions are really inventive and then obviously taken to the next level in some of his subsequent films, but just really, really impressed with the whole presentation and with I was surprised in an animated film for there to be such a real sense of geography and a real sense of, you know, where these people spend their time. And they obviously know the streets better than most and they, you know, can navigate around and find ways that others can't. And it's just...
Well, it's even when they went to Graveyard and she just pointed out, Graveyard. I was like, so? And then you see them, grave robbing, but obviously that's, yeah, respectful grave robbing. And then they find the nappies and things like another like happy coincidence.
They're very resourceful, aren't they? I'm glad you picked up on the humour because there's a lot of quite funny bits, like the milkmaid with her big breasts, kind of like a different kind of nudity, and the police sketch of the baby as well, maybe there.
Absolutely.
What did you guys think of? It's probably. Probably the only instance I can think of an LGBT or of a trans woman in animation. I haven't seen enough of these films, but I thought the depiction was well outlined for not Uncle Jin. What was the character's name? What did they call her?
Hannah.
But I called it Uncle something as well. I can't remember. But yeah, what do you think of the trans aspects of the film?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. So trans... representation is still a bit dodgy in Japan. I don't think
that's... And this is 2003, right?
So exactly. What I was going to say. I think it was ahead of its time in that respect. I mean, there's still a lot of... on Sudden Double Dip, we used to call them the F-bombs, you know? Things like that make it a bit uncomfortable. But I also think it's a really rounded representation of this character and, it doesn't even go into, who they were born as. It's just who they are now. Because it's not really necessary to the story, you know. Hannah was a woman when she became homeless. And so, you know, we don't need to see beyond that. You're right, though. I haven't really seen much LGBTQ plus, you know, in anime. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing.
I think it's interesting that, like, as you say, there are so many ways you could misrepresent someone in that scenario, but everybody is treated with agency and with kind of sympathy, and everyone is a character in their own right. There's no one who's a caricature, bar maybe the mob bosses, but there's like everybody has their own distinct characteristics, and everybody has their own arc. And I was really pleased by that, because you have a father-daughter reuniting two different ways, and you have an orphan who's looking, I guess, looking for purpose and looking to be a mother, which is like, and ultimately saves the day. So it's perfect in its kind of telling the same story multiple different ways with different characters.
I completely agree. And like the kind of peripheral issues that it keeps picking up on, like you said, like there's a really brutal kind of suicide thread towards like the start of the third act, which just like, I know we've seen it, you know, in kind of like It's a Wonderful Life, you know, he's on the bridge and stuff, but this really takes it to next level where she's basically trying to take the baby and jump off a bridge. And if you think about the reality of that and how stark and horrible and bleak it is, it's kind of a miracle that you come out of this film heartwarmed at the end. But
well, it is a Christmas film.
Just you stole my joke. But yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. And moving on from that, I mean, the fact that it's a Christmas film, not just in anime, but in Japanese cinema in general, there's really not that many Christmas films at all.
I mean, that setup at the start was like, threw me for a loop. So it's interesting. Guys, is there anything you want to say before we head to the scores?
Just that I'm so glad with the reaction here from all of you, you know? I didn't really know how this was going to go.
You haven't heard the proper scores yet, so...
No, I know, but I can tell, like, you've all taken something good from it. And, you know, if it's made you think, do you know what, I might check out more Satoshi Kon, then amazing. If it's made you think, I might just try out some more anime, even better. Yeah, it's a really good kind of gateway film. And it's the perfect season for it. So yeah, check it out.
I'm always on the lookout for alternative Christmas films. I've recently heard people flying the flag for Prometheus, which is, I mean, if you want that to be a Christmas film, fill your boots. But
I recommend The Thing if people are really struggling for an alternative Christmas film.
Why not? I saw the with Prometheus, it's Idris with the Christmas tree, isn't it? He's put in there.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
That's the one.
Okay. Well, let's head to the scores.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. The scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And let's start with you, please, Ben, with your recommendability.
I mean, I'm so sorry. I think it's going to be quite hyperbolic with all of these. But for me, this is a 5 out of 5 recommendability. As long as you can read subtitles, I don't think any reason why you shouldn't be checking this film out.
Joe?
For me, I went back and forth on it. As you say, you know, Japanese cinema, anime isn't for everyone, but I think this film is. So that's why I'd give it easily a 4 out of 5. I think that, you know, you could show this to quite a wide audience, and I think it would be well received.
Helen?
I really enjoyed watching this, and it is nice to have some alternative Christmas films that don't just carry on with the same kind of genres and tropes. And I think there was a line in it that really resonated with me, which probably says a lot about our state of mind in 2021, is all anyone can do is their best. And I think that's a great message to have anytime, especially during the holidays. As I think we've definitely mentioned a couple of times before on the podcast, we have a friend called Will. We love him dearly, but he is not an animated film fan. And I think for some people, it might be a little bit more of a hard sell. That said, I did really enjoy it, so I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Wow. I'm happy with that.
I love how some people do take the, you know, they're really put out if the choices are,
I know,
not
Helen's
well regarded.
Helen's a tough cookie to crack. I listened to the show and I'm really happy with that. That's a strong score.
Is she like the Nasty Nigel and Simon Cowell of the FlixWatcher crew? I'd just give away high scores willy-nilly.
I was going to say, I wouldn't go that far. Yeah, no. They're strong.
It's Christmas, Kobe. Be nice to me.
I'm being nice to you. I'm just saying I'm asking Ben if he regards Helen as the more stricter scorer.
Harder to please, I'll put.
I'm going to go for 4.3. I think it's, I mean, when he chose it, I was like, oh, what the hell is this? But I don't know why I do that. Because every time, you know, put on a Ghibli or something, I'm like, well, this is marvelous. But I'm just reflecting in the fact that I think people will say, what is this? And then not give it a moment's notice or even press play on it. So yeah, 4.3. Repeat viewing score. Ben, you've already seen it like five times.
I was going to say, sorry. Can I just say, like, on that point, like, that is half the problem, I think, with the world right now, is they get really close-minded with what they're going to watch all the time. You're like, just open your mind a little bit, try something different. You might really love it. Anyway, sorry.
Too much choice out there. It's really hard when you're faced with that many films to take a chance on something, because
next
you're
time you're sitting there going, should I watch Christmas with the Coopers or Christmas with the Cranks or Last Christmas or should I watch Tokyo Godfathers? Then maybe just give this one a
spin. I think it's the fault of algorithms as well, that people are getting more and more of the same, whereas there should be an anti-algorithm that gives us different things that brings in like different experiences.
And Netflix wrote that says the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
The opposite of what we'd recommend.
Yeah, we challenge you to like this.
what Keepin thinking we should do is, you know, how Netflix gives you a predicted match percentage. We should try and bring that into the podcast and see how closely Netflix assumed you would like
some of them are wild off for me.
I think that's probably the fault of this podcast. Repeat viewing score, Ben.
Yes. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I've watched it twice a year since I discovered it. But, I mean, I'd say, you know, once a year at Christmas. Whack this out once a year at Christmas. So, what's that, 4.5?
Sure. Joe?
I'm slightly less likely to watch it again. I'd say, yeah, I mean, maybe once a year max. I'd say I could go 2 years without seeing it because, you know, it might be too repetitious. But I'd give it a solid 3. I'm definitely going to watch this again. It might just, you know, as you say, there's a lot of films out there. Next Christmas, hopefully I'll watch some other ingenious anime that I've never heard of. How about that?
Helen?
I'm also going to join Joe with a 3. I think I'm not sure I'm going to watch it every year at Christmas, but if I happen to be with someone around the Christmas period and they're like, hey, we need a film to watch and they haven't seen this, I would definitely recommend that we watch that together.
I'm going to give it 2.5. I don't think I'll be watching it that much, but what I do want to do more is check out more Satoshi Kon. I should, you know, it's one of the hang my head in shames and not seeing Ghost in the Shell and Akira, and also just watch all the Ghibli films because they're there on Netflix. So I'll probably do all those first before coming back to this. And that might take me a while because, again, there's every film in the world to see. Small screen score, Ben.
I mean, I've never seen this on the big screen. And, you know, if I ever got the opportunity, I would absolutely chomp at the bit for it. So, yeah, I don't really know. I would love to see it on the big screen, but I've only seen it on the small screen. So I don't know what you'd give that. I just want to keep the score up, so I'll give it a 4.
Sure. Ben. Sorry, Joe.
I'd give it a 5. I don't think it suffered really all that much from being on the small screen. I think, like most people over lockdown, have perfected their setup so that it's, you know, a small screen is still probably over 40 inches at this point.
No, Joe, the amount of times I walked into someone's house and got the remote control off them and set the contrast, changed
things. Oh, you're that guy. Yeah. You're Jerry from Rick and Morty. The contrast setting is always too high. No, I'm the same. I'm with you on that. I didn't throw you under the bus. I'm jumping both of us under the bus.
No, that's worse. Helen, small screen score.
Obviously, I haven't seen this on the big screen. I enjoyed watching it at home. I don't think I'd needed to see it on the big screen, so I'm going to give it a 5.
I'm going to give this a 2. Oh no, I'm going to give it 3.5 because I'd like to see this on the big screen. Next time I watch it, I would like to see it on the big screen. And because, like I said, all the detail in the backgrounds, and I flicked between my iPad and the TV just because of life. I noticed it was hard on the iPad to pay attention. So I think I get some benefit from watching on a cinema screen. Engagement score, Ben.
there's no way in hell I'm turning this off if I've started it. So that's a five from me.
Joe?
I suppose because of my issues, I can't say that I watched it in one sitting.
It's my drowsy issues.
Yeah. I'm imagining watching this at a Christmas that I'm full of, you know, too much food and just overfull and sleepy. So I can't be a five. So I decided to give it a four. Like I was engaged and I wanted to find out what happened next, but I had to watch it over multiple sittings.
Helen?
I think you have to be really engaged because it moves along quite tight. A lot happens for, what is it, an hour and 31-ish minutes? So you have to be obviously engaged so you can read what's going on. And, you know, things happen and there's kind of like little details that you have to look out for, like the little clues and everything. So I think I'm going to give this a five. Like, I hold my attention. I didn't know where it was going. Like, was with it all the way. And just, yeah, it had me.
I'm going to give it a five because, again, it's one of those ones where, as Helen said, once you started, you have to be paying attention because otherwise, you know, you've lost it. And that gives us an overall score of 4.20625, which is pretty damn high.
Strong.
Very happy with that.
Repeat viewing score was took it down a couple of notches. Okay, let's head over to Twitter. Okay, guys, do follow us on Twitter because, it's great to be part of the party. But also, we'll give you a little bit of a heads up before we record, asking for reviews with a tweet like this. We're reviewing Tokyo Godfathers with Benji Box and Shite Guys Pod. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and your score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on this here podcast. We had one response, which I wasn't expecting. I thought this might be quite low, but Ben, go for it.
Yeah, so this is from an account called K Botak, which is actually a Korean drama and movie podcast that I follow. It's really good. But they've put, my brother introduced me to this when we were down for Christmas one year. Ideal festive viewing, my favorite Christmas film. I love this bunch of misfits and the world is brought to beautiful life by the artistic eye of Satoshi Kon once again. And then they also share an analysis by Accented Cinema, which I haven't actually checked out yet, but I should do. But yeah, another fan.
And I pushed them for the score out of five, and they said, they gave it five on Letterboxd, so it's five for them. Ben and Joe, can you tell us where we can find you online? And we'll get to say goodbye to all the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd as @BenjiBox. That's Benji with a Y. And yeah, you can listen to us once a month on the Third Window Films podcast. I think Adam's Twitter is @ThirdWindow. And yeah, if you're into East Asian cinema in any way, shape or form, we basically cover the length and breadth of it. So you have some fun.
And you could find me @ShiteGeistPod on Twitter. Unfortunately, the podcast is defunct, but you can go back and listen to whatever was current in 2018 when we last podcasted. If you like the sound of my voice or Kobe's, then I would send you over to The Wire Stripped because it's an excellent podcast and the guys always put out a really solid show. So yeah, big up The Wire Stripped. That's @TheWireStripped, presumably.
Yeah, no one else has got that name. Yeah. Thank you very much, guys. It's been a pleasure to talk Tokyo Godfathers.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us @FlixWatcherPod on Twitter and we're @FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.